This is called How to Read Poetry. Take the word butterfly. To use this word is not necessary to make the voice weigh less than an ounce or equip it with small, dusty wings. It is not necessary to invent a sunny day or a field of daffodils. It is not necessary to be in love or to be in love with butterflies. The word butterfly is not a real butterfly. There is the word and there is the butterfly. If you confuse these two items, people have a right to laugh at you. But do not make so much of the word. Are you trying to suggest that you love butterflies more perfectly than anyone else, or really understand their nature? The word butterfly is merely data. It is not an opportunity for you to hover, soar, befriend flowers, symbolize beauty and frailty, or in any way impersonate a butterfly. Do not act out words. Never act out words. Never try to leave the floor when you talk about flying. Never close your eyes and jerk your head to one side when you talk about death. Do not fix your burning eyes on me when you speak of love. If you want to impress me when you speak about love, put your hand in your pocket or under your dress and play with yourself. If ambition and the hunger for applause have driven you to speak about love, you should learn how to do without disgracing yourself or the material. What is the expression which the age demands? The age demands no expression whatsoever. We have seen photographs of bereaved Asian mothers. We are not interested in the agony of your fumbled organs. There's nothing you can show on your face that can match the horror of this time. Do not even try. You will only hold yourself up to the scorn of those who have felt things deeply. We have seen newsreels of humans in the extremities of pain and dislocation. Everyone knows you are eating well and are even being paid to stand there. You are playing to people who have experienced a catastrophe. This should make you very quiet. Speak the words, convey the data, step aside. Everyone knows you are in pain. You cannot tell the audience everything you know about love and every line of love you speak. You cannot tell the audience everything because you already know it. You have nothing to teach them. You are not more beautiful than they are. You are not wiser. Do not shout at them. Do not force a dry entry. That is bad sex. If you show the lines of your genitals, then deliver what you promise. And remember that people do not really want an acrobat in bed. What is our need? To be close to the natural man, to be close to the natural woman. Do not pretend that you are a beloved singer with a vast loyal audience which has followed the ups and downs of your life to this very moment. The bomb flamethrowers and all this shit have destroyed more than just the trees and villages. They have also destroyed the stage. Did you think that your profession would escape the general destruction? There is no more stage. There are no more footlights. You are among the people. Then be modest. Speak the words. Convey the data. Step aside. Be by yourself. Be in your own room. Do not put yourself on. This is an interior landscape. It is inside. It is private. Respect the privacy of the material. These pieces were written in silence. The courage of the play is to speak them. The discipline of the play is not to violate them. Let the audience feel your love of privacy even though there is no privacy. Be good whores. The poem is not a slogan. It cannot advertise you. It cannot promote your reputation for sensitivity. You are not a stud. You are not a killer lady. All this junk about the gangsters of love. You are students of discipline. Do not act out the words. The words die when you act them out. They wither, and we are left with nothing but your ambition. Speak the words with exact precision with which you would check out a laundry list. Do not become emotional about the lace blouse. Do not get a hard-on when you say panties. Do not get all shivery just because of the towel. The sheets should not provoke a dreamy expression above the eyes. There is no need to weep into the handkerchief. The socks are not there to remind you of strange and distant voyages. It is just your laundry. It is just your clothes. Don't peek through them. Just wear them. The poem is nothing but information. It is the constitution of the inner country. If you declaim it and blow it up with noble intentions, then you are no better than the politicians whom you despise. You are just someone waving a flag and making the cheapest kind of appeal to a kind of emotional patriotism. Think of the words as science, not art. They are a report. You are speaking before a meeting of the Explorers Club of the National Geographic Society. These people know all the risks of mountain climbing. They honor you by taking this for granted. If you rub their faces in it, that is an insult to their hospitality. Tell them about the height of the mountain, the equipment you used. Be specific about the surfaces and the time it took to scale it. Do not work the audiences for gasps and sighs. If you are worthy of gasps and sighs, it will not be from your appreciation of the event, but from theirs. It will be in the statistics and not the trembling of the voice or the cutting of the air with your hands. It will be in the data and the quiet organization of your presence. Avoid the flourish. Do not be afraid to be weak. Do not be ashamed to be tired. You look good when you're tired. You look like you could go on forever. Now, come into my arms. You are the image of my beauty. That was Leonard Cohen, and I will do my best not to insult you this evening. So I'm going to start with a poem called Beeswing. Beeswing. Pull the wing off a bee, and it will still die for the sting. I think about the times I pulled my feet out of shoes too small to fit, how many times I tore the nail free from the toe, and I wonder if this is dying for the sting, for pulling off a bee's wing, until it hits me that a toenail is more like the myth of a complete other thing with wings. Skin breaks for being thin as a bee's wing, and as I watch your cock go soft, fall back, it is clear you died a little death for the sting, from the sting of it too. Body spent, a myth of a complete other thing with wings stirs. In the ash, death reigns fertile. From the ash, a bird rises. From the ash, a new toenail begins. The first time I've ever performed my work or read my work with music in the background, and it's a real treat. So I'll ask you to clap for them again, but I think it'd be really lovely to give a clap for Mo, for Gary, and for Jack. So this next poem is a poem about boxes, and I hope that as I go through it, the metaphor for the boxes becomes obvious. If it doesn't, you can come and see me later and I will draw you a picture. So there's also a reference to La Petite Mort in the piece, and La Petite Mort is French for the little death, which is a metaphor or euphemism for an orgasm. So that's also in here somewhere, amid the boxes. So here's the box. Vive La Petite Mort. Here is a box. You cannot tick it, flick it, or lick it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot get sick in it, pop a stick in it, or put your dick in it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot tickle it, pickle it, or be tickled with it. It is not that kind of box. It is not the kind of box to sleep in, weep in, or reap what you sow in. This is the kind of box that is good for turning one thing into another. It is a kind of box to go deep in. Someone once told me I had a small box, too small for any man to fit, which made me think of grapes. Little boxes growing in clusters, each cluster dangling like a tit off the vine, each cluster going sour for being beyond the fox's reach. Sometimes I wonder if he lulls himself to sleep thinking only death will succeed, for going sour already puts me within reach. But death is not about going sour. It just turns one thing into another. Death makes it possible to pour wine from a box. La petite mort makes it taste good. Here is a box. You cannot plug it, suck it, or spelunk it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot draw a map on it, put your stamp on it, or tap an ass with it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot sink it, drink it, or be surrounded by the pink of it. It is not that kind of box. It is not the kind of box to be a hound in, make a sound in, or lay around in. This is the kind of box that is good for turning one thing into another. The kind of box to go down in. Someone once told me I had a sexual view of love. Too sexual for it to be love at all, but a box is full of room, and a room can be full of box, provided there is at least one woman standing in it. And sometimes, all it takes is one. I used to have a necklace, and I would run it down the length of my body just so I could watch it slide over my hips, because that was one way I knew to measure the whole weight of love. The only other way takes up much less space. The shenanigans of intimacy boil down to what passes between two people when their mouths are open and desire hangs like a dog's tongue. Here, love's the pits of two cherries so long as you can get through the flesh. For all the times that I cannot, I wish I had that necklace, but that necklace has been lost. Death is not about loss, it just turns one thing into another. Death gnaws at the flesh to find love in the pits. But it is La Petite Mort that makes love bearable. Here is a box. You cannot fling it, sting it, or put a ring on it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot bag it, tag it, or put a fag out on it. It is not that kind of box. You cannot be a god in it, put your rod in it, or stuff a cod in it. It is not that kind of box. It is not the kind of box to be rough in, crave a muff in, or do as the doctor says and turn and cough in. This is the kind of box that is good for turning one thing into another. It is the kind of box to go off in. Cemeteries are full of boxes turning one thing into another. Cemeteries are like wounds this way. The body comes raging out of a box. This is how the body starts, the end result of juice and flesh, turning one thing into another, all the rage of two raging lovers who cannot smell their own slow decay, because that is how it is from the moment we start. From the moment we start, decay does not rage in the same way. But death is not about decay. It just turns one thing into another. Death puts us into one kind of box, but it is La Petite Mort that pulls us out of our mothers. Here is a box. Somewhere, there's another kind of box, and it is having more fun than this box. Whatever gnaws at us from the moment we start, this is the kind of box that knows the bones are for the dogs. So go on, lay yourself down. This is the kind of box. Just snog in, jam your log in, and be a dog in. Yay for boxes! They're great. So there's a couple that I think I can do off the top of my head, so I'll attempt to do that. And if I get scared and I need to grab the page, then I will. This one is called You Cannot Tell Me. You cannot tell me love is a cockroach if you haven't seen it run across the floor, or convince me that freedom is a dove if you haven't seen it fly past your window. You cannot tell me sadness is a lamb if you haven't seen it hanging in the slaughterhouse, or make me believe that forgiveness is a fish if you haven't seen it swim like a ribbon in water. You cannot tell me what I already know. Love turns us into insects. We're nothing more than fragile when we're crawling on the floor. Sadness hangs, always hangs after slaughter. Sadness is a lamb I've eaten at Easter and the day after. But freedom is not a dove. Forgiveness, not a fish. If it were so, my lover would have sent me a dove. My lover would have given me a fish. Write a lot about love and the body, and this next one is about love, and the body is inferred somewhere in there. And actually, I'll tell a little bit of a story about this, which isn't really related to the poem, but you know, it's funny where you get images sometimes. So years ago, I was in Edinburgh and I was doing a master's in international health, and was having dinner with some friends, and there was one of our classmates who we didn't invite to the dinner that we had, and she walked by the window of our house and she saw us having dinner, and she's like, "Why didn't you invite me?" And then we didn't mean not to invite her, we just didn't invite her. It wasn't an intentional thing. She was a bit upset about it, and so we said, "Well, you know, you can come over, because you know, at the end of the day, it's food and it's nice to share it with people." But as we were waiting for her to come over, I was talking with a friend of mine, and I'm like, "Man, she's just full of fire, and she's all of these things, you know, like don't want to mess with her." And my friend said something like, and I thought she said, "Oh man, she'd fight the wind," and I thought that was like an amazing thing, but really she said she fights to win. And so I was like, I like she fights to win better. She fights the wind better. And so I kind of kept that line, that image, for this poem. So that's in here somewhere. That story and this poem are, that's the only relation that they have. Other than that, I wish her well wherever she is. And she did come over for dinner. It was nice. So, two sheets. Love and hate are wounded things, half dead between the first and last kiss. Hate, he concludes, is love's equal. It is there in the weight. He slits the loins as if he were pulling apart two halves of a pomegranate. He's about to give one set to the dog of love, throw the other to the dog of hate when she walks in. "It takes seeing someone naked," she tells the scientist. "You have to get naked to know how love and hate became wounded things, half dead between the first and last kiss. Here, the weight of love is equal to the weight of a lover who pulls you out of skin, then plunges you back in. But if you are bent on it," she tells the scientist, "if you mean to do so careless a thing, then it is just as you have shown it to be. Hate is love's equal, but only in weight. The difference between them is as old as it is delicate. They are not dogs, but two sheets out on the line. Where one gives in, the other fights the wind. In this way, love and hate are wounded things, half dead in the soils of the first and last kiss. There, in the soils, the loins cannot be split. Two halves of the whole pomegranate, the loins belong to love, and just to love alone. It's love's way of showing lovers they are made of bones and skin. It is love's way of showing lovers it's the going in and out that makes it intimate." Right. For what it's worth, halfway through our second glass of sangria, he takes my hand, touches it as though he's there on hands all his life. We talk of love and Lorca's duende, the dirt of feeling, the darkness, and the fight. He says, the fat in my palm makes me a very sensual woman. Like this city, I say, these hands mark where a body begins and ends. Then we would circle around my borders and make a sign. Here, the entrance to Madrid. Where love is of the body, love has no grounds to be outside the only place with a space to feel it. Still touching my hand. If he keeps at it, he might not let it go. He says, I have a very sexual view of love. For what it's worth, I think he is only 40% right. We're lovely to have a gypsy guitar with us. So now I'm going to do a few poems about my grandmother. So when I was little, so I'm from Canada, but my background is Greek, and both my parents are Greek, and when I was 9 years old, we moved to Greece for forever, which translated into 3 years before we moved back. So I spent the ages of 9 to 11 in Greece, and we lived in my dad's village, and so I kind of spent a lot of time with my dad's parents. So my dad's parents would be my grandparents of my dad. Anyways, paternal grandparents. So much easier when you have it down on the page to just follow the words. Anyway, so this is about my dad's mom, and this first poem is about watching her make a salad, and it's called Onions. My grandmother picked only tomatoes that looked pregnant because she said they made the best salads. Sitting in her kitchen, I'd watch her knife away, separating cucumbers from prophylactic skins. In all her years, she had gathered a wisdom the citizens of burned-down Troy would envy. Her hands shook with widowhood and old age, but she never let it slip. The knife was now a heavy part, staining the place of the uterus, which used to grow into all kinds of nutritious sizes. The first real intimacy I ever spied lived in those raw cucumbers as she let water lick them in corners most exposed. Always, the onions were left to the end. It has taken years, but finally, I understand that breaking down an onion is nothing short of murder. Like a surgeon ill-taught in the proper ways to excavate the human body, my grandmother grew merciless with the onions because they were merciless with her. She could never cry for the dead the way she cried with them. So that one was for all the vegetarians. This next one is for anybody who likes meat, and especially chicken. And again, it's for those 3 years when I lived in Greece, and this is about watching my grandmother butcher a chicken. And it's called Chicken Feet. We ran after footballs, tore into oranges with our eyes, fingers, and teeth. Kicking at empty boxes to prove we had no fear, our exposed bellies were like lions yawning in the Greek heat. In the yard, my grandmother had a pot of water on the boil. Inside, the chickens had limped and folded over, head dangling over the side like a dead hand. There was nothing dead about hers, though, and we watched as she went about the business of butchery, pulling first at the feathers, then at the insides. The chicken needed no more manicuring to become food. Claws and nails remained, curled, in a rigor mortis grin. Back then, it was easy to picture death smiling, her mouth sharp and yellow. Actually, so a couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, I was in Greece with my sister and her husband, and we went and visited all our cousins. By this point, all my grandma had passed away, and she was a bit of a kind of a rough lady, so not really that affectionate, but she really, really loved her husband. It was a really powerful and beautiful love. And one of my cousins told me this really stunning story of her going to this monastery and then having something for the first time and loving it so much that she wanted my grandfather to have it too. And so this story is about that. And it's called Love Bears the Wood. His body was pulled from the cross and turned into bread for all eternity. Passed like love from one body into another, as if the only way to feel love is to eat love. Love is not a food, and that feeling of fullness isn't what it feels like when you love someone. The first time my grandmother ate ice cream on a stick, she loved it so much she wanted my grandfather to try it. She loved him so much, she wanted him to know what eating something for the first time would taste like, the complete newness of it. So she bought one and put it in her purse for when she would see him again. Of course, the obvious thing happened. It melted into a sea of white cream, leaving the stick as the offering, the only solid thing pulled out from the deep cave of her purse. Now, you can go ahead and tell me that I'm wrong to deny the power of bread, wrong to compare the body of Christ to a pool of melted ice cream, but I know love, and love does not compare suffering. Love bears the wood. also a big fan of fruit metaphors in my work. I think I have fruit and vegetables. And so we have onions, we have my grandmother's tomatoes, all these things. And then this is one about figs. And it's four small poems that all deal with the fig, and I've kind of put them together. And so it's a poem in four parts. So, fig. Part one, what a woman looks like on the inside. Now that I have discovered figs, I think of a virgin getting ready for his first woman. Now that I have discovered figs, I sit in my kitchen becoming a different kind of cannibal. I bend my tongue to get fig deep the way a boy bends to get to a place where he feels surrounded and sweet in the body and the fruit. And I wonder how big the figs grew in the garden, if that's the tree he slept under while the snake was pulling back the folds in Eve. Two, he calls my body an umbrella. He likes the way I open, how rigid my bones can be, how they function to stretch the skin, how breasts grow high, the beautiful brown tips. When he sleeps, I sit in the bathroom eating figs, and I imagine this is what it looks like when he puts his mouth over me. Three, the plumber. The flesh between bones and skin has been there since the beginning. The nudity between a rib and a fig hasn't changed shape. But I've called in a plumber to fix the hole underneath the kitchen sink. He's working on leaks and taking peeks, and I very much think so deep into the pink. Somewhere between his wrench and his screw, he's sure to tickle something to remind me of you. Four, it could have been Eve. It could have been anyone. When they unearthed the bones, removed the dirt, and put each one in place, they concluded that they were looking at a woman. There it is, they said. That's the rib she was built from. But then someone brought them a fig, and they saw for themselves, after it was split in two, that instead of a rib, woman is built from a hole that holds secrets like children. Figs, but the metaphor of the figs kind of goes into this next poem. But we'll see. So, hands up, how many people like horses? How many people like vaginas? Yay! This is a poem about vaginas! Okay, otherwise I would have said it's a poem about horses if more people like horses. But anyway, here we go. Horse logic. Yes, I love it. And I love it most of all. Sweet. Yes, I love it. And I love it most of all. No point being dainty or delicate, not with something that's as deep as a horse nostril, darker than a hole in a wall. I love it, the way an executioner loves the sound of a guillotine. But darling, careful where you put that head, for it may have been that sound as it chopped away at the tent of Marie Antoinette. A sound so tight, so wet, it turned half the world to cunt as hers took its last breath. And I love it, and the legend of teeth. A diagnosed condition or a spiritual disease. I love it for the way a wasp on land, like a fish out of water, its fish mouth making the shape of an O. O for the eye of Orwell, an O for the organ, an O for the Omicron, an O for the opening into the underworld. And I love the way you go to hell in it. I love the way it spits you out in spring, but come winter, I love the way it pulls you back in, and I love it most of all for the way it makes your mother cry. Ooh, god, an immortal beast. When it howls, it's something only dogs can hear. And I love the way it turns itself into a dog for you. I love the way it knows that you have the kind of body a dog would lay down next to. I love the way it bleeds out cherries, a gift horse with a mouthful of fruit turning girls to women. And I love the way you go digging for a pit, even if it's a pit not worth planting. Yes, I love the way it knows something you don't. I love the way it feeds on love, and I love the way it knows something you don't. I love the way it eats meat down to the bone, and I love the way it knows. I love the way it knows something you don't. I love it for the way it competes and wins at death, hung like a noose, like a Tom Waits song. I love the way it breaks the neck of your triumphant hard-on. When there's no bread left to eat, I love the way it says, let them eat pussy instead. I love it, and I love it most of all. It's a horse head in bed. And it makes an offer you can't refuse. He brought them back, made them flesh again. If a lover's hands are shaped like fish, on the one hand it could mean something, on the other it could mean nothing. Eating with one's hands is better than prayer, though even there, Christ brought the two together. Before it was his body, it was just a piece of bread in his hand. When two languages collide and there's no way of knowing what is said or understood, it is the hands that speak. Hands speak love. There is nothing, nothing between the legs or on the tip of the tongue that knows the intimacy of words like the handwritten syllables of a love letter. They know when the end is coming. Think of all the hands that waved goodbye on the Titanic. And because we're born with two of them, this is another poem about hands. And so going back to the Spanish painters, this one is makes reference to a painting by Goya. Goya had these two really lovely paintings of the same woman. In the one, she's completely dressed, and in the other, she's completely naked, the Maja Vestida and the Maja Desnuda. And so there's a reference to the Maja Desnuda in this piece. So Goya knew better. There are those who believe that a woman is a loser. So the story goes. Yes, woman is a loser, straight from the apple core. And for every story that makes it so, there's another about man built with one bone missing, another bone sticking out. Even still, I bet Goya knew the difference between cocks and diviner rods, and for the way the Maja Desnuda extended her body like a fist unfurling, I bet he knew better than to mistake an open hand for surrender. is about love, and it's called Salt. I filled my mouth with words. They sat on my tongue, waiting for you to draw them out with your mouth, the way the tide pulls on grains of sand. I would have given them all to you, like sand giving way to salt in every way. I told people that your smell was like a bee, buzzing up one nostril and flying into the other as though my nose were a flower in need of sex. They were concerned with the amount of salt in my diet. It will lead to delirium, they said. I made myself forget what you looked like, your open mouth, your flirting hair, until I saw you again. It gave my eyes a thrill to take in your measurements and feast on a body so fit, as if for the first time. For the thrill and from that thrill, I turned to Salt, another pillar, another Lot's wife. I listened for the sounds of birds, but I would come to know the difference between songs of morning and songs of night, for the different kinds of day we were together. I preserved the memory of the weight of your body in grains of salt 1,000 years old. And there, as though I were underneath you still, for the tide and the bee, for my eyes, and the sounds of birds in the morning, sounds of birds at night, I confess. But I laid myself down then, like a dog, for less.
One more.
Okay.
Honey,
one sting, your bum, a bag of nails, and here's the sweet thing, your bum also does the hammering, your bum, your bum, your bum, your bum, like a song about a plum, that is a spitting image of your bum, 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 splits exuberant down the middle like a watermelon.